Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Darkcast Network.
Where the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Fruit Loops, episode 157. Bienvenidos, bitches and buiti binafi, and thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and the victims that we don't hear or know much about. Contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight, cis-het white dudes.
What?
No.
What?
I'm telling you, there are many well-documented cases of serial killers of color, and Fruit Loops is a podcast all about them. We will take deep dives in the fascinating lives and crimes of serial killers and true crimes committed by people of color and the victims that the media and entertainment kind of leave out because, wait a minute, what? I'm not going to believe this. My notes say the news is racist.
What?
Allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
It's not her fault, y'all.
Yeah. And today we also have Minnie.
Hello.
She is also a white lady, and she's my sister.
Yep. I am. All my whole life.
Not her fault either.
Yeah, not her fault.
Nope. Not my fault. I'm her sister.
Yeah. Nobody's fault.
Wait.
That's you. Oh, I know. Shots fired.
Anyway, we're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a triple of gals.
A triplet of gals
interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions. Please send any questions or comments to fruitloopspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at
602-935-6294. Nailed it.
And we may feature it on a future episode.
Also, our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show and become a Fruit Loops patron. You can also support the show by supporting our sponsors.
Yeah.
Anyway, who are we talking about today, Beth?
Well, this is part two of our story about Heriberto Seda, a.k.a. the New York Zodiac. So if you haven't... So if you haven't listened to episode one yet and you want to figure out what the hell Wendy's doing, go on back and listen to episode one and we'll meet you right back here.
All right. Well, before we get into it, How you doing?
I'm still wiped out from CrimeCon.
Oh, yes. Talk yeah. about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a lot. It was a blessing, but it was
we,
a lot.
Yeah, it was. We were so busy. And I think I ate a lot of crap, too. So
me, too.
My body's just like mad at
what
me.
What the hell?
What did you do to
Lee,
me?
Why?
How about you, Minnie? How are you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was exhausting, but... Mm-hmm. In the best possible way. It was nonstop. It was a whirlwind, but it was it was really, really good. But it's nice to be back home. I did miss my husband Antonio.
Oh.
Yesterday we went to that's right. Got the Latin flavor over here. So yesterday we went to his parents for Mother's Day. As we were driving there, Antonio said, well, I was trying to tell you about this when we were in Vegas, how he says these hilarious things when he gets cut off. So of course someone cut him off as he was driving and he called him an ass clown.
Wow. Oh, I love that one.
He was like, fucking ass clowns.
Ass clown.
Yeah, it's kind of a made-up term that I think means like part jackass, part clown. Like, you joker, you clown, but you're also a jackass. So
I'm so here for this
clown.
One.
Yeah,
this is nice.
I could not stop laughing. And yeah, I kind of missed his little phrases when I was in Vegas.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. fun to be back in that again.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to be home. Feels good to be home. CrimeCon was a blast. It was awesome meeting all the fans, making new friends, and of course, our live show was pretty damn lit. So.
Yeah,
it was.
We had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now let's get into some listener letters.
Well, hello, angels. Thank you.
Well, what's in that bag, Beth?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to Jordan for your 5-star review.
Yay.
She found us at CrimeCon and caught our live taping.
Mm-hmm.
So she did a review. So it was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also wanted to say thank you to Allie, Lindsay, Zuska, and Milton for your emails.
Absolutely. Thanks, y'all.
Yeah.
Okie doke. So just a reminder, we are leaving Podbean. So Patreon is where it's at if you want access to bonus episodes and ad-free content from Beth, Wendy, and Minnie. Now, we got some new Patreons. Ashley R. Tanisha says, that's a.k.a. Milk of Magnesia. Leona W. Zuska. Alisi LG. Patricia M. Love Paper Paint, a.k.a. Kate from CrimeCon.
Oh, man, she was awesome.
Yeah.
We love Kate.
Hip hop air horns to all of you. I'm going to do it now because I am a forgetful bitch. Okay, so this is in honor of Jewel, the first lady of Death Row, who died this week. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah. Ashley, yeah, yeah. Tanisha is in the house, yeah. Leona, Compton, Death Row is in the house, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I messed it up, but I'm sorry. I hope you liked it. Okay, this is another Death Row contribution. Because, again, the first lady at Death Row passed away. This is for Alisi LG. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, apologies. All right. La-da-da-da-da. It's the motherfucking Alisi LG, a patron. Okay, and this one is for Love Paper Paint, who insisted on a 90s R&B tune. And this is for you. You will always be a fruity, and we are part of you indefinitely. Kate, don't you know we gotta thank you? Oh, darling, because you'll always be a Vegas. Messing up a little bit. Anyway, I'm doing my best here. There's so many Patreons. The blessings come in. The blessings come in, but it's hard for me to keep up. So anyway, here's another one for Zuska. I had a vision, Zuska. And it was more that you'd given to me. That's it. And Patricia, I want to love you, Patricia. That's it. The end.
The end.
Yeah. All right. So also, Minnie makes me very nervous. I think that's part of it.
Why?
I don't know. I feel very shy. Anyway, hip hop air horns.
Oh, you should not.
I'm dumb.
I love your song.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to get into the story when we come back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries.
Okay.
Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So
nice.
I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's better, HELP.com/fruit.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy.
People don't always realize that physical symptoms like headaches, teeth grinding, and even digestive issues can be indicators of stress. And let's not forget about doom scrolling, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, undereating, and overeating.
Okay, so the copy here says to talk about my experience with stress. Oh boy, do you have an hour? Where do I begin? Work, bills, life, family. I could go
podcast.
On for a very, podcast, a very long time. And I actually do. Though in therapy, which is so helpful for me so I can manage, deal, and get through it.
Stress shows up in all kinds of ways. And in a world that's telling you to do more, sleep less, and grind all the time, here's your reminder to take care of yourself, do less, and maybe try some therapy.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't wanna.
It's more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fruit.
That's BETTERHELP.com/fruit.
All right, guys, it's time for me to come clean. It's
okay.
It's time for me to tell the truth.
All right.
It's time for me to spill the beans.
Okay.
It's time to fess up. It's time to keep it a buck. Keep it 100.
Are you going to get to it?
Oh, yes. So sometimes after dark, I sneak away and play best fiends. Others may wonder about my mysterious disappearances. They say, who does she think she is? David Blaine? David Copperfield? I say none of the above. In fact, I'm having so much fun playing best fiends. Ever heard heard of it?
Why, yes, I have. I love Best Fiends. I love collecting the little monsters when you play so I can level up my fiends. Also, I love going in for the super long matches to free up the board and beat levels. Ooh. I am happy to report that I am on level 440.
That's amazing. Okay, friend, I see you flexing over there. Now, Best Fiends is a free-to-download mobile puzzle game with thousands of exciting new levels for new adventures and challenges every time you play. I am on level 304. Beth, tell them about the offline play.
Yes, of course. There is offline play, so you don't even need Wi-Fi or the internet.
Oh, good. So download your new favorite getaway, Best Fiends, for free today on the App Store or Google Play.
You'll even get $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5.
That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. So, we are back. Maybe we should recap for the folks what has happened.
Let's
what do you
do
say?
It.
Okay, hit it.
So in part one, we covered some of the history of New York and Heriberto Zeta's early life. Eddie's father was not around when he was growing up, so he really didn't know his father. But his mother doted on him and bragged about how talented and smart he was.
As a child, Eddie spent time alone and withdrew into his own world in his head. He dropped out of high school at the age of 16. As he grew into adulthood, he spent more and more time by himself and never sought gainful employment. Neighbors described him as odd.
Seti sent a letter to the police identifying himself as the Zodiac. Oh, sorry. I heard Zodiac and I tuned out.
I fell asleep.
Police disregarded the letter because they couldn't find any crimes to match to it and assumed it was just some weirdo looking for attention.
A few months later, Seda shot 49-year-old Mario Orozco, a Scorpio, with a homemade gun. Mario survived. 21 days later, Seda shot 33-year-old Germaine Montanestro, a Gemini. Germaine also survived.
63 days later, which is a multiple of 21, Seda shot 78-year-old Joe Proci. Joe at first survived, but died 3 weeks later. Seda left a note near Joe, again identifying himself as the Zodiac. He also mailed identical handwritten letters to the New York Post and the CBS news program 60 Minutes.
God damn it, I just killed a fly, landed right in my teeth.
In your teeth? Wait, did you?
No, my teeth.
Oh, in your teeth. I was like, did she catch a fly in her teeth? Because that would be fucking amazing. I'd be like, is that?
Not even.
Awesome.
I don't know why she swallowed a fly. I guess she'll die. Okay, so police studied the letters for 2 weeks before going public with the announcement that their correspondent, then known as Zodiac or Faust, was wanted in connection with 3 unsolved shootings. And that's where we left off last week.
All right.
So now it's time to get into the timeline. Continued. What do we got, Beth?
Well, another 21 days after Joe's shooting, early in the morning of June 21st, 1990, Larry Parham, a man who had been living in Central Park, was sleeping on a bench in the park when he awoke to a pain in his chest. He didn't immediately know what had happened, but he saw a man walking away from him.
Another man who had been asleep behind the nearby band shell and was awakened by the sound of a gunshot found Larry and called the police from a call box in the park. Larry had been shot in the chest while he was asleep. The bullet missed his aorta and exited his body through his right armpit, so he survived the attack. Mm. And I just wanted to interject here that we did have a question during the live taping at CrimeCon about doing in-depth research, and I'm not the greatest at off-the-cuff responses to questions. Plus, I was trying to be respectful of the time limit that we had, so I didn't want to go on too much.
Right.
But I just kind of have been thinking about it since then, and I just wanted to mention that when I do the research, I not only do research by the name of the subject, but also by the names of the victims, because you can usually find a lot of information by focusing on the victims' names while doing the research, which is as it should be, since really the victims need the focus. I also search on sites like Ancestry.com to see if I can find more documents to verify ages, relatives, narratives, things like that. And I try to look at as many sources quoted by other sources as possible. So sometimes there's a source of a source of a source of a source. And sometimes,
I mean,
you can really go down the rabbit hole that way. But that's kind of how you can verify a lot of the information that we look at. So anyway, I just want to add that on.
Okay,
thank
cool.
you. Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing. You're really great at this.
I try.
So when interviewed by the police later, Larry told them that a stranger had asked him about his astrological sign a few days before the shooting. Another note with Larry's astrological sign was found in Larry's shoe next to the bench. On that note, police discovered a single fingerprint.
At this point, investigators began to focus more on connecting this Zodiac killer to other crimes, noting that he seemed to choose vulnerable men as his targets. Joseph and Mario both walked with a cane. Jermaine was likely inebriated when he was attacked, as he had been walking home from a party. Larry had nowhere else to live, so was sleeping on a bench in the park.
The detective sifted through library records to look for withdrawals on books on astrology, and they also consulted astrologers and began to warn the public not to disclose their birth dates to strangers and to contact police if they had been asked about their birth dates by strangers or if they had any other pertinent information to share, which is still good advice, by the way, not to disclose your birth date to a stranger, whether in person or on the internet.
But then you get less presents.
Yes, honey. I'm always, you know, kind of wary of those quizzes that want you to like, oh, find a GIF that
all
relates to your birthday or something. I'm like, they're going to know what my birthday is if I do that. So yeah, I'm always wary of those things as well. I don't do very many of those quizzes on Facebook and stuff like that.
I used to. I didn't know what they were up to, but now I know.
Those sneaky sneaks. Yeah.
But I need to know what Disney princess I am.
I think you know.
Wait, which one are you?
All of them.
I was gonna say, remember we were looking at that website in Las Vegas? I forget what it was called. Oh, Rejected Princesses.
Oh, that was awesome.
What?
So I think I'm a rejected princess.
Oh, a princess reject?
Well, it's a website that somebody made. They make suggestions of princesses, but they're all like crazy suggestions.
Yes.
Speaking of Disney princesses, I always have to interject here when we bring up Disney princesses. The only black princess is Tiana, and she's the only princess with a motherfucking job. I'm just going to say that and leave it there.
It's true.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Where are we?
So anyway.
Huge tangent. Oh,
sorry. Birth dates, you know, not giving them to strangers.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So you just don't want to make it that much easier for identity theft criminals. Plus, you know, serial killers obsessed with religion and astrology.
Right. So the three previous shootings had taken place in an 8-block square area in the East New York section of Brooklyn and nearby Woodhaven. So the efforts of the detectives to find a pattern in the crimes were confused by Larry's shooting in Central Park.
Based on descriptions given by Joe and Larry, the police began to search for a black male between the ages of 30 and 35, between 5 feet 10 and a half inches, 10 and a half, Jesus, just keep it at 5 foot 10, and 6 feet tall. And weighing about 180 pounds. He was said to have a mustache and a beard at the time. And that doesn't look anything like Seda.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. But it sure would have given the police a lot of reason to unnessarily harass
black men.
Black males who fit that description.
Which would be a lot of them, probably. Yeah.
Yep.
So because of the line in the initial letter that read, quote, Orion is the one that can stop Zodiac and the Seven Sister, unquote.
Ooh.
Creepy, right? The police reportedly began comparing the pattern of the stars in the constellation Orion, which is also called the Hunter, to the sites of the shootings in an effort to predict where the next attack would be.
It's just so funny to me because in the end we learned that this is all random and the efforts there, like getting astrological books from the library.
They were grasping.
That's good police work. You don't see that.
They were trying. They were really trying.
Yes. And I don't say that often. So anyway, the most prominent feature of the Orion constellation is his belt of three evenly spaced stars. The first three shootings were in spots more or less in a straight line along the Brooklyn-Queens border. The fourth was far away in Central Park, roughly where the star representing Orion's head could be in such a comparison.
By then, they had also noted the 21-day pattern with attacks always happening on a Thursday. So they were expecting another potential attack on July 12th of that year, but it did not happen. They then went on high alert for subsequent three-week intervals, but again, nothing. Then on August 29th, a little over 2 months after Larry was shot, with no new evidence and no attacks, the Zodiac Task Force was cut from 50 detectives down to 19.
The New York Zodiac went quiet for over 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
Some have speculated that this was because a fingerprint had been found on the letter near Larry Parham, information which was published in the media. But then on August 10th, 1992, SATA struck again.
This is one of those cooling off periods that they talk about serial killers having.
Yeah, but that's a really big cooling off period.
So this time, he completely broke his pattern by attacking on a Monday and attacking a woman. The victim was Patricia Fonte, a Leo, and a 39-year-old outpatient of a local psychiatric hospital who suffered from clinical depression. A friend of hers says she was a lovely woman who would sometimes seek treatment at North Central Bronx Hospital.
Patricia was shot and then stabbed over 100 times near a reservoir in Highland Park, Queens. Her death attracted little media attention.
Mm.
Holy crap. How many times does one person have to be stabbed for it to get attention?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. This was some serious overkill. The killing wasn't linked to the Zodiac at the time, as it was so different from his previous attacks.
And it's interesting. I heard an interview with Heriberto talking about this particular crime.
Uh-huh.
He was like, I don't think I stabbed her that many times. Somebody else must have come after me.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Oh, sure.
Right.
That happened.
That happens all the time. Listen, I left this body over here. I stabbed it once, okay?
The other 99, that was somebody else.
Obviously.
Cue Shaggy song. Yeah. It wasn't me. Side hanging on the counter.
It wasn't me.
Side stabbing in the shoulder.
Wasn't me.
Anyway.
Yeah, that particular one, all the other ones were shot. Like, when you stab somebody that many times, that's like rage, you know, that level of overkill.
Yeah. But at this point, also, he had shot numerous people, and they didn't all die. So he was, like, failing, and maybe this was a, like, I'm going to make sure it works this time.
I don't know. I think it's because
it was
a
woman, though. Yep.
Yeah.
Good point, ladies. OG true crime comes through every time.
Shouldn't be out that late. I'm going to stab you now.
Yeah, dirty, dirty lady. I'm going to stab you.
Crazy. Anyway, about a year later, on June 4th, 1993, James Weber, age 40 and a Libra, was shot in the leg while he was walking at Vermont and Cypress Avenues near Highland Park. SATA was no longer going with a pattern of killing on Thursdays and in 21-day intervals. Seems like he knew the police were aware of that pattern, so he was changing it up so as not to get caught.
On July 20th, 1993, he crept on John Diaconi, age 47, a Virgo, who was experiencing homelessness and who, like Patricia, was struggling with mental illness. He had been a resident of Pilgrim Psychiatric Center in Suffolk County, but had run away from the center 12 days prior. Sayla shot him in the neck at close range in almost the same exact location in Highland Park where James Weber had been attacked. John, unfortunately, did not survive.
On October 2nd, 1993, SATA shot Diane Ballard, a 40-year-old Taurus, and left her partially paralyzed. She had been shot in the neck and wounded while on a park bench in Highland Park near Jamaica Avenue in Brooklyn. The bullet missed vital arteries but stayed lodged against her spine. And this is not the kind of souvenir that anyone wants.
No. Yeah,
that's a devastating injury to have to live with for the rest of your life. And this, and it because of somebody else.
Right.
Yeah. In March of 1994, SATA was arrested for possession of a deadly weapon after police noticed a suspicious bulge in his jacket pocket that concealed one of his zip guns. He was not happy to see them. He was fingerprinted.
Oh, man.
I was like, I'm going to sneak that in there and see if they noticed.
That in there.
They noticed.
Oh, my God.
So he was fingerprinted and the gun was examined.
Oh. Sorry.
Police.
I can't help it.
Oh.
Whoa. Dude.
Oh. Police determined that the weapon was not functional, and Seda's public defender got all charges dropped and his arrest record sealed, along with the fingerprints that had been collected from him. Seda interpreted his turn of events as an omen, proving that he was beyond all consequences.
Oh, why do these guys always think this? I got away with it. That means I'm,
you know,
invincible, invisible, whatever it is.
Something.
Whatever it is. That's me.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Paul Brandis introducing my podcast, Countdown to Dallas. It's a fascinating, in-depth look at the seemingly unconnected events that led to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's based on my book of the same title. In that book and in this podcast, I go all the way back to 1939 when Lee Harvey Oswald was born into a troubled and dysfunctional family. I'll follow his transient and often violent teenage years and young adulthood, painting a fuller picture of the man who would later become Kennedy's killer. I also take a look at events unfolding in that era, like Cuba and Vietnam, and I'll unpack the conspiracy theories too, not one of which has ever been conclusively proven. Subscribe to Countdown to Dallas at evergreenpodcasts.com or your favorite listening app, October 31st.
Get ready for your starring role in a thrilling adventure full of hidden clues, immersive scenes, danger, and romance.
That's right. It's June's Journey, and you play June Parker, an amateur detective investigating a series of mysteries.
Ooh, you'll put your powers of observation to the test, sharpen your sleuthing skills, find objects, and claim rewards.
The visuals are fire. It's like a party for your eyeballs. As you play this thrilling adventure full of hidden clues, immersive scenes with danger and romance in full force.
Whether you're craving a good mystery or just need to get away for a while, June's Journey is the perfect game for you.
It really is a sweet escape. I like to play when I need a mental pick-me-up.
There is a detective in all of us. Find your inner detective. Download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. So now we're going to get into the investigation and the arrest. What do you got, Beth?
It was not until a letter sent to the New York Post in August of 1994 that the more recent shootings were linked to the New York Zodiac attacks of 1990. In the letter, he claimed to be responsible for the recent string of attacks and taunted police for not finding him, saying, quote, "Hi, I'm back," unquote.
Guess who's back?
Bitch, I'm back.
Back again. Say it is back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back? I've created a monster because nobody wants to see Minnie no more. They want Seda. I'm chopped liver.
Oh, wow. Minnie's got bars. We got to go do karaoke sometime.
We do.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm down.
Next crime con, for sure.
Next crime con, yeah.
So at first, the authorities were not convinced that the letter was from the same attacker, but after further examination, police concluded that it was not a hoax. However, they were unsure if it was written by the same person or by someone who knew of the assaults.
The messages included codes based on international maritime signal flags, which York Post journalist Kieran Crowley decoded with the assistance of his father-in-law, a veteran of World War II, cryptography and signals intelligence. Yeah. By the way, Kieran Crowley also wrote a book on Zeta entitled Sleep, My Little Dead, The True Story of the Zodiac Killer. And you can find a link to it in the show notes.
All right. So police briefly entertained the idea that the California Zodiac, who had never been apprehended, had just relocated to New York. But they quickly ruled that out through handwriting analysis and other differences in the cases.
On June 18th, 1996, Seda, now 26 and still an unemployed high school dropout living with his mother and half-sister, obsessed with weaponry and the teachings of the Bible, became angry with his 17-year-old sister, Gladys Reyes, for associating with people he thought of as quote-unquote disreputable types. Yeah, she should be hanging out with murderers like you, right? Right?
Right.
What an ass clown.
Oh my God. You just, I mean, the bar is like in heaven now. I mean, Jesus. She does it again, folks. I'm sorry, I can't help it.
Neither can I.
Seda was mentally and physically abusive to Gladys, and during a confrontation with her and her boyfriend that day, Seda pulled out a weapon and began threatening the couple. While Gladys's boyfriend hid in the bedroom, she tried to escape through the front door, but Seda shot her in the buttocks, his own sister, wounded but not incapacitated. She made her way to her neighbor's apartment where she called the police.
So I watched the forensic files on this case, and they said that he was mad because she let her boyfriend in the house and they were hanging out in her bedroom. So that's what he was mad about. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Culturally, in Latinx cultures, it's a no-no.
Yeah.
That you basically can't hang out with boys until you're married to one.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a Bible thumper too. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Seda initiated a standoff with the police, barricading himself in the apartment, holding his sister's boyfriend hostage.
What?
Yep. During the 3.5-hour standoff, he fired numerous rounds at police and refused to give up. He finally did surrender, and when he did, officers lowered a bucket from the roof of the building, into which he was asked to put all of his weapons. So he placed 13 homemade zip guns in the bucket. 13.
Wow.
Wow. That's a lot. And a later search of his room revealed a cache of weaponry, religious books, crossbows, knives, and bomb-making manuals.
Wow.
Yeah. He had everything. The police also found 2 pipe bombs and enough materials to build at least 9 more.
Yikes.
As well as a collection of basketball trading cards.
Oh, my God.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you gotta have that.
No.
Right?
Not the basketball trading cards.
Were the Knicks good that year? I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. Thanks, Spjorts.
Spjorts.
Spjorts cards. And one article said that he also had a collection of trading cards on serial killers.
Wow. In the 90s, that was a thing?
I mean, trading cards on serial killers, like what the actual fuck, like what kind of bubble gum would they include with those? The people need to know.
Seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously, though, is that a real thing? Or did he just make these himself? Or is that just media sensationalism striking again? And it really was just basketball trading cards.
I think it probably is a real thing.
You think so?
People are weird.
I know there are serial killer coloring books.
True.
And it doesn't seem like a stretch for there to be trading cards.
When
we were at Crime Con, there were serial killer shot glasses available in the swags. But it just seems interesting that in the 90s, this would have been a product available to anybody to buy. So
I mean, the 90s. Yeah, I can see it in the 90s. Now, if it was the 70s, then no, absolutely not, because they didn't even call them serial killers back then, I don't think.
No.
So but the 90s, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
OK.
Yeah. It's kind of creepy, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not into that.
Neither. Yeah. I'm more interested in just the psychology of what's going on.
Right.
So apparently, speaking of psychology, during the siege, Seda also wore what appeared to be a helmet or a saucepan on his head. So, and when I was reading about that, I I just couldn't get out of my head the chum bucket helmet from SpongeBob. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
Only because you included the picture. But yes.
That's what I had in my head.
That's
I was like, what?
Funny image.
I know.
Just imagining him like the standoff and everything, and he's wearing a bucket on his head.
With a bucket on his head.
Yeah.
Although, so I don't know, because it was only in the one article, and they lowered a bucket for him to put his stuff in. So I'm just wondering if somebody mixed it up and they thought, but I just like after that, I couldn't get it out of my head, like Seda wearing a chum bucket on his head during this siege, because, you know, he was being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Don't fact check us on that one.
Yeah, don't fact check us on that one. But
it's possible, but
maybe there was a bucket.
Maybe on there his wasn't. Head.
Yeah. We don't know.
We don't know.
Anyway. I don't know. I just think chum bucket sounds like cum bucket.
Oh, geez.
And you were talking about Jackass at the beginning of the episode. I finally saw the Jackass 2 movie, and there's so much cum paraphernalia.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I love gross stuff, but it was too much even for you. It was too much even for me.
Even so, for anyway. You. Wow. Well, I shan't be watching that.
It's quite the movie.
I'll take my tea and my knitting, and I shall watch something else.
For Mother's Day, I made Old Whitey watch it, and he was like,
oh my God, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's love. Anyway, so Detective Sergeant Joseph Herbert of the New York Police, one of the negotiators that had convinced Seda to surrender, said, quote, he was mad at his sister because she was hanging around with the wrong people, drug dealers, troublemakers, and he didn't like that, unquote.
Neighbors said that Seda absolutely hated drug dealers and used to tip off police officers assigned to the neighborhood about who was dealing drugs. Clutching a Bible, he would also preach to the dealers. Oh, that seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Herbert said, quote, he was very religious. He kept talking about Jesus and good and evil and salvation, but he never explained how he made his jump from a Roman Catholic upbringing to a Zodiac serial killer, unquote. Yeah, that is a interesting...
Inquiring minds do want to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the neighbors also said that he had recently stood in the middle of the street and declared, quote, I'm going to start killing. I'm going to start killing because I'm not getting no sex, unquote.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, just for the record, this is not a valid reason to start killing. Just saying.
Couldn't agree more. Also, definitely doesn't make the pussy wet to just declare that you're going to start killing everybody.
Not getting no sex.
No.
Okay. You're still not getting any.
Dried up like a desert.
Yeah, dried up like a desert. Yeah. So following his arrest after the standoff, he was interviewed at the police station and asked to write down his statement of the events. Seda wrote in a fashion that Sergeant Herbert found strikingly similar to that found in the letters written by the New York Zodiac killer, especially to the signature symbol used to sign off on his letters, which he claimed signified God.
Sergeant Herbert had been involved in the intensive manhunt for the New York Zodiac killer, so he was very familiar with his writings and recognized the handwriting and one of the Zodiac symbols, an inverted cross topped by the number 7 in 3 spots that jumped out of the page.
When he saw the symbol, he said, quote, I nearly fell off my chair. I recognized what I believed to be the handwriting similar to handwriting that I had been studying for the last 2 years. I thought there was a strong possibility that this handwriting could be one and the same as the writing in some of the communications the Zodiac had sent, unquote.
And by the way, I heard an interview with this police officer is in the show notes.
Okay. Cool.
What is the podcast? Police off the cuff. Anyway, he immediately decided to run a check of Seda's fingerprints and found a match to the scene of the 1990 attack in Central Park and another match to a 1994 letter mailed to the New York Post. Handwriting analysis determined a strong similarity between Seda's statement and the anonymous letters.
When the police confronted Seda with this evidence, a detective said he stared straight ahead and began to squirm in his chair. One detective told him, quote, you're going to be a lot better off off if you just tell us what happened, unquote. And it wasn't long before Seda began confessing to the Zodiac shootings from 1990 to 1993.
As to the motive, an investigator who spoke on the condition of anonymity said, quote, Seda said he had to kill them because they were evil, unquote. The police also said that Seda, in his rambling statement, offered no insight into how he selected his victims or mapped out the attack locations, which police had deduced had astrological underpinnings.
A detective said, quote, he doesn't respond to the whys or wherefores. He just got the feeling he'd go out and select the victim, unquote. 7 out of 8 victims had a different zodiac sign, though only one recalled a stranger who asked him about his birth date.
Seda later claimed that he didn't select the victims by their signs, that it just worked out that way by chance, that they all had different signs. As to the 21-day pattern, he also claimed that was by chance, that he would just get an overwhelming urge to kill and respond to that urge. And responding to that urge, he'd go out and pick a victim at random.
Seems highly unlikely, especially given that he seemed to know the signs of the victims when he wrote the letters to police. But I guess he had his reasons for insisting that it was all random and that he was only responding to urges. It actually makes me wonder if he was thinking ahead to the trial and already trying to manipulate his sentencing.
Zing! Like,
right?
Wow.
Yeah.
I had not thought of that.
I think, maybe he thought that if he said it was just spontaneous responses to urges, then he might be able to claim that it wasn't premeditated and he'd get a lesser charge.
Wow. I know okay, can I have my edges back, please?
Wow. Here you go.
Wow.
Yep.
Again. She does it again.
Well, he also admitted that he had intended to use the bombs that he had made, but hadn't quite figured out when and where to use them.
That's scary.
Scary. Yep.
Yeah.
And this is the 90s. I'm just thinking Oklahoma City bombing was 1995. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
like,
yeah. They were very sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So on June 19th, 1996, the solve was announced by Police Commissioner Howard Zafir, who said that Seda was the man responsible for 8 attacks, 4 of them fatal, between 1990 and 1993. Zafir said, quote, we're confident that we have the individual involved in these crimes. The investigation is continuing and we're not ruling anything out, unquote.
New York City mayor at the time, God. Rudolph Giuliani. Sorry, everybody, but he was the mayor at the time. And that guy said it was astounding that the Zodiac arrest was the 3rd serial crime case cracked in a week, coming on the heels of the arrest of an alleged rapist charged with attacking 11 women and the arrest of a drifter accused of brutally beating 4 women. He said, quote, this is the most extraordinary week they've had as far as I can remember, unquote.
The 90s had been pretty crazy in New York for violent crime. A Utah tourist had been murdered in the subway while trying to protect his mother from a gang. And a prosecutor had been gunned down while buying donuts.
Hmm.
And someone called the Dart Man had blown homemade darts at over 50 women in Midtown Manhattan before he was caught.
Wow.
As he was shooting him in the butt with,
with
these little homemade darts.
Wow.
Yeah. Jesus.
So... yeah, just to name a few of the people actively doing some really whack shit.
Whack shit, yeah.
Very
to
whack.
To throw back to that 90s term. Shit was whack.
It's about an 11 on the whack scale. So
greatest city in the world.
In the world. Is it though? Is it?
Well, I was going to say, I guess it depends on who you ask. And I have a little culture corner.
Okay, here we go.
Hit us.
Everybody buckle up.
Oh, right. So Giuliani, among black and brown people, is one of the worst mayors and human beings in human history.
Yeah.
He incorporated that broken windows policing. And under Giuliani, there was extreme harassment and police brutality.
Didn't he start the stop and frisk?
Yep.
Mm.
A stop and frisk. And just any black or brown young man on the street minding their business would... could potentially get harassed by one of the police on Giuliani's force. And if you talk to any man who was growing up at that time in that area, every one of them has a story of being pulled over or harassed by police.
Right.
But crime is also related to income inequality. And we've said this before, people aren't like robbing because it's so fun or joining gangs because it's so fun, right? It's because people are struggling and have a need.
They're trying to get by.
The more people are struggling, the more crime there is. Yeah. And New York is a very good example just because there's the have-nots and the haves. There's such a huge disparity between the two. Mm. And crime is subjective. So yeah. Giuliani implemented this broken windows policing and criminalized acts that are only criminal depending on who you ask. Like if we all smoked weed today in New York, we wouldn't go to jail. But if we did that 10 years ago, we would all go to jail.
Yeah.
Loitering because there are no public parks or benches, that kind of shit. And right. 150 years ago, just going to say this, me reading this script would have been a crime.
Yeah,
so
shit.
Just something to think about.
Right.
But anyway, Sergeant Herbert said he had no time for celebration after his big break, which was recognizing the handwriting on the note. He said, quote, "I'm excited a little. Oh, I peed a little. But I'll be honest with you. I knew it was just the beginning of a lot of work. Suspicions are one thing. Proof positive is quite another. And I'm still here in the same clothes, you know, 24 hours later," unquote.
Yeah. Wow. That was like multiple truth bombs hitting. Like
you blew her mind.
That was, yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Her brain is on the floor. Give her a second to pick it up.
It's like, you know, like when you said, you know, it was just especially when you said 150 years ago, me reading this script would have been a crime. Like, oh shit. That's just fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to. Up.
No, it's acts. True. Yeah, yeah.
Acts
I mean,
certain acts are criminalized, but we all agree certain acts are very bad, like murder.
Like murder.
Yeah. But everything else, and rape too. But everything else, it just depends on who you ask and who's in charge.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That is very, very true. So there was a lot of work being done at the time trying to get DNA working on things in the 90s. We've talked about DNA a lot.
Right.
And Seda's, it's good stuff, right?
Yeah.
So Seda's DNA was actually later found on the envelope flap of the letter sent to the New York Post.
Oh, and he licked it?
Yeah, he licked it.
Dumb.
The stamp affixed ironically said love on it, which is kind of fun.
Interesante. Wow.
So forensic investigators were also able to match some of the bullets retrieved from the victims to Seda's zip gun by looking at them microscopically and comparing tool marks.
Well, so now it's time to get on into the trial. What's the what, Beth?
Well, on June 21st, 1996, Seda was arraigned in the criminal court in Queens and ordered held without bail. He was formally charged with fatally shooting two men, wounding a third, and stabbing a woman to death. That was Patricia Fonte, who you might recall had been stabbed over 100 times, plus 7 counts of weapons possession.
Separately, he was also charged with the attempted murder of his sister Gladys, as well as 13 officers, 2 paramedics, a hostage, and an onlooker during the police standoff that he had initiated. He pleaded not guilty to the charges related to the standoff.
His trial, held at the State Supreme Court in Queens, didn't begin until almost 2 years later on May 14, 1998. The case was prosecuted by Assistant District Attorneys Robert Masters and Raymond Shear. The prosecution presented the testimony of 45 witnesses and introduced 150 pieces of evidence.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
At the start of the trial, once he was seated at the defense table, he repeatedly shouted out at the judge, alternately demanding a new lawyer and screaming that he did not want to be in court. I don't
want to be there. Nobody wants to be there. Except me. Pick me for jury duty, please.
He also yelled at his lawyers, David Bard and John Wallenstein, when they tried to quiet him. Shh, it's okay, baby. Shh.
Oh, man.
Give him a hard candy. Give him a butterscotch.
When Justice Robert J. Hanafy ignored his outbursts, he said, quote, "I feel like I'm invisible. Get me out of here. I'm losing my mind. I don't know what's going on here," unquote. At one point, he said, quote, "Yo, judge, hello. Are you listening to me or what?" unquote. Or what?
Or what?
Or what? By the way, if you ever want to piss off a narcissist, the most effective way is to ignore them.
Oh,
they cannot deal with it.
Don't like that.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, you're welcome.
When the judge asked to no one in particular, quote, "Do we have a gag somewhere we can put on him?" unquote. Sitha shouted, quote, "I don't need no gag. I want out of here," unquote. Even after a recess to consult with his lawyers, he persisted. But he did calm down once the jury filed into the courtroom.
In an opening argument that lasted longer than an hour, ADA Masters detailed each of Sadie's crimes. He mapped out a timeline of shootings that started in March 1990, stopped after June 1990, and then began again in August 1992 and lasted until October 1993. Masters described Seda as a serial killer who stalked only the weak, the elderly, the homeless, and those with drug and alcohol problems.
He said, quote, "He did these things for his own violent, sick reasons and out of sheer cowardice," unquote, stating that his motive was, quote, "simply that he was angry, angry because he was expelled from school, because he had tried to join the army, but he was rejected," unquote.
John Wallenstein, one of Seda's court-appointed lawyers, stressed to the jury that to gain a conviction, the prosecutors must prove that Seda was guilty of all crimes committed by the Zodiac. He said, quote, "If you have doubts as to any of these acts, then that blows the whole case out of the water. This is all or nothing," unquote.
He also cast doubt on Seda's confession, stating that Seda wrote and signed the confession to the shooting of his half-sister, but the confession to the Zodiac crimes was written by police officers. Wallenstein said, quote, "He didn't write it, the police did. It's up to you to determine. Did he tell the police or did the police tell him?" Unquote.
Well, I think people assume that police are credible. And they're not a lot of times.
Sometimes they are. That's true. Sometimes they are. Yeah. In this case, I think, yeah, I don't know. But regardless, I think, yeah, he definitely did it.
He did it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So he also said that although the fingerprints and DNA evidence may link Mr. Seda to the letters, they do not directly link him to the crimes, which I guess is kind of true, actually.
But there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But,
like, what
yeah,
a coincidence.
Seriously. Like, yeah, this is very highly coincidental. She would know when these happened and sent the letters and all of that. Yeah. So he said, quote, "It only proves that he at one time touched the letter. It doesn't prove that he fired the shots," unquote. As to the outbursts in court, he attributed those to lack of sleep.
It was a good effort by Wallenstein, but ultimately it did not work. And after a six-week trial on June 24th, 1998, Seda was found guilty of killing three people and wounding one person in Queens between 1990 and 1993. At least five jurors wept as the jury was polled. Seda displayed no emotion.
Seda's mother, Gladys, sat quietly in the last row of the courtroom as the verdict was read against her son, who prosecutors said chose his victims at random, looking for vulnerable people who could not fight back.
ADA Masters said that the jury's emotional outpouring was probably due to a great sense of relief. Quote, "But I think the jurors also were very absorbed in the sadness of the victims, and I think it was a very difficult thing for them to call a human being just about the worst thing that you can call him, a serial killer," unquote.
Seda apparently took the verdict well, only saying that he wished he'd been found not guilty of something. He was convicted of 17 crimes involving the four victims, including murder, assault, and criminal possession of a weapon.
It's such a childish complaint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish they just found me not guilty of one thing.
Something. Just this one thing.
Just what?
Can I just be not guilty of something?
No, you can't.
Guilty.
Seda's lawyer, Mr. Wallenstein, said, quote, "The jurors indicated that they really analyzed everything and essentially looked for ways to find reasonable doubt and to find him innocent if they could, but they were obviously unable to do so," unquote. That's from his lawyer.
Yeah, that's from his lawyer.
That's nuts. Yep. Okay.
Go ahead. Yep.
Sorry.
Well, I think he was trying to give him props. It's like, you know, like, they really tried, but, you know.
Yeah.
And for a court-appointed lawyer, this Wallenstein, he's good.
Yeah, he was good. The arguments that he presented were really good. Yeah. But yeah, just not enough.
Yeah, because the dude was guilty.
Yep. Yeah, he also said that he was not surprised by the verdict. Quote, "We felt that the jury took the time to analyze everything, but there was so much evidence. They had everything but an eyewitness. And in the end, there's only so much you can do with that," unquote.
True that.
Yeah. The other ADA, Raymond Shear, who also prosecuted the case, spoke of the mountain of evidence that was presented to the jury during the trial. Quote, "I think like the police officers who were involved in the case, the jurors are somehow going to be affected by this case for the rest of their lives," unquote. Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Seda tried to play the religion card during his sentencing, telling the judge that he had found religion. Didn't he already find religion?
Yeah.
He found it again.
Now he really found it and was a reformed person. But the judge told him he should seek out the prison chaplain to confess his sins and turn his life around. Burn.
Yep. Yep. Good one, Judge. Virtual high five.
Yeah.
On July 22nd, 1998, Justice Robert Hanafee sentenced Seda to 83 and one-third years to life in prison for murdering three people and wounding one other. In a separate trial, he was also convicted of the attempted murders and sentenced to an additional 152 and a half years. Mm. He won't be getting out of prison anytime soon.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
All right. Yeah. So now we're going to get into where are they now? Well, I'll tell you. So Seda is currently incarcerated at Clinton Correctional Facility, the prison in Dannemora, New York, where he reads the Bible daily and quotes scripture to his fellow inmates.
Oh, yay.
After being arrested, he made several attempts to reconcile with his sister, Gladys. I'm sorry I shot you in the ass, Gladys. Can we be friends again? But she refused his calls. The only family member or friend who has ever visited him in the maximum security prison is his mother.
Most of the Zodiac's living victims still suffer physically and psychologically from the attacks. Some, like Larry Parham, a devout Christian, have forgiven Seda for what he did. Others, like Jermaine Montenestro, refuse to discuss the case. Mario Orozco still lives in the East New York and does not let fear stop him from walking the streets or enjoying the company of friends.
In prison, Seda began a sexual affair with Cynthia China Blast, a.k.a. Luis Morales, a transgender person who identifies as female and is allegedly a member of the Latin Kings gang. Blast was serving a sentence for gang-related murder, and we'll be talking more about Blast on a future episode of Fruit Loops, so we won't get into that now.
Ooh, okay. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm going to save that one for later.
All right, so now we're going to get into our takeaways and what we think may have made Seda snap. What do you got for us, Beth?
Well, it seems to me like there definitely were some mental health issues going on. Mm-hmm. Seda was a loner and had difficulty connecting with other people from a very young age. This seems to me to be what fed his anger, like incels. He's screaming in the streets that he's going to kill because, quote, "I'm not getting no sex," unquote. Mm-hmm. So he lashed out. And this is, again, not an excuse, but an explanation.
Certainly.
Something else that's interesting to me was how he clung to the Bible. Mm-hmm. Yet he thought it was okay to kill people. And yeah. I'm always a little suspicious of people who are super duper religious. Many of them, not all of them. but too many use the Bible as a tool to beat other people with, but have no real understanding of the religion. Like they're policing other people's behavior, like Seda did with his sister Gladys. Mm-hmm. They study the rules, but they don't really get anything else out of it. Like people who are on diets trying to force themselves to stick to a rigid plan, but it's not possible to keep to it if you don't address the underlying issues or, you know, think about it other than what just a surface. It's just a surface solution.
Yeah.
He definitely needed help with his mental health. But it was the 90s. He was living in poverty and our country sucks at addressing mental health issues. So
it sure does. Zero stars, United States.
Do not recommend.
Nope.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah. So I agree, Beth. What came to my mind is, Minnie, you were absolutely right on, what did you call it? Failiacs. Failiac killer. Yes, I like that one. Because he failed at school. He failed with his attempts to join the army. And then when he was out of options, he lashed out at everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, poverty and racism circumstances prevented, I think, him from maybe getting developing. Help that he needed or developing. Yeah. At one point, we mentioned that his mom wouldn't let him play outside, and he didn't really have an ability to thrive and found solace in books. And he was pursuing this dream of the military, but it failed. this is so stupid, but I dreamed I wanted to be Whoopi Goldberg in Sister Act. And then I realized I wasn't Catholic. So I pursued my next dream of starting a podcast about true crime. And for many poor people and people of color, the military is a legitimate way to get out the mud. And he lost that.
Right.
And it was like a death of a dream. And he bereaved it in a really fucked up way.
Right.
He was also really depressed and essentially had nothing to live for, nothing to love. Yeah. And I was really disgusted by some of the forensic experts who weighed in on the case and the judge. They described him as like an angry animal. Mm-hmm. And only it seems to me that white men who are on trial for horrible things or do horrible things are not described in the same way.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hurt people hurt other people. Also about his victims. I'm thinking about ableism and poverty and lack of resources. All of his victims were really vulnerable in vulnerable positions.
Right.
Just something I noted.
In that podcast you listened to, Phil Chalmers, didn't he say that he looked
specifically,
people who were, what's the word I'm looking for?
Who couldn't run away.
Yeah. Yeah. He could overpower.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So just rest and power to all the victims. And I imagine that the entire community was rattled by this case at the time. And I imagine there might have been a collective trauma, not only because of the murders that were going on, but because of the police response that also made these communities of color and these poor communities more vulnerable
to police. I didn't even think about that.
Intervention.
Yeah.
I feel empathy for adult Seda. But I wonder if like reform is even possible for somebody like him in prison.
Yeah.
You know, because prisoners make things like underwear and license plates and they fight fires in California and some incarcerated people, help train animals for therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if there's some sort of skill he could use his skills to contribute, you know, from behind
to
bars,
the community. Yeah.
To the community in some way.
Make him feel connected.
But I don't know. And maybe it's just a pipe dream. I don't know. But anyway, those are my thoughts. What do you got, Minnie?
So many different thoughts that kind of go in different directions. But one thing I was thinking of when you were talking is the fact that he chose the people who were, inebriated or needed a cane or
vulnerable
in some way. Mm-hmm. I wonder if in some ways he was sort of symbolically killing that part of himself that he saw as a huge failure and vulnerable and unable to do the things that he wanted to do.
Right.
Wow. Okay. Jesus Christ, I'm completely bald. My jaw's on the floor. There's nothing left, Minnie.
welcome.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That is an excellent point.
Wow. It didn't really hit me until I was listening to you and I was like, you know, I wonder if something like that was going on.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Know?
Yeah, killing off himself.
Yes. Yeah. And it was this, it's kind of the same with the religion thing. Like, so he's very clinging to the righteous.
Right.
And in some ways, maybe he kind of saw himself as a what do you call the angels that... a vengeance angel or whatever.
Right.
Isn't there something like that in the Bible? I have to admit, I have not read the Bible.
I haven't either. It's a very long book.
I know. I tried to. I could not get through Genesis. I'm like, really? 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 And I keep meaning to try to again. But yeah, they had 300 children and they lived for 600 years. I'm like, no, they didn't. But yeah. So I tried to read it. But yeah, I know I've heard this alluded to in other shows and other things, so I don't know if it's actually in the Bible, but it's like some like an angel of death,
an avenging angel,
angel. You know, I wonder if he saw himself in that way, and so he had a sort of a polarity to his self identity, in which case he was trying to cut out the vulnerable, failing part of himself, and doing that symbolically by killing people who symbolized the hated parts of himself or something, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Or if he saw them, he would just get really angry. And,
which would explain why he stabbed
that
Patricia?
One lady.
The woman?
Yeah. Patricia 100 times. Because that's rage.
Yeah.
That's
like, he was.
That's not, yeah. That's not
that's
like
not normal.
I forgot my gun, so I'm going to use a knife instead. That's like full on. That's close contact rage, you know, like it's intimate, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well,
so something about her because she was depressed. Right. And you were just talking about him being depressed.
Yes.
And maybe he just hated that feeling in himself. And when he saw it in her, he just wanted to kill it, you know.
Yeah. All right, over there, Wendy.
I'm blown away.
I mean, I just found your wig up here in Canada.
You're speaking to my ghost. My body is on the floor, and my spirit has left the building. Wow. Okay. Wow. That your hot takes, spicy hot takes. I love them all.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. That was incredible. Woo! Well, do you have any more or should we?
Okay. Yeah, I don't think so. I think that was everything I was thinking of. Because initially I just thought of him as just your run-of-the-mill sociopath and he was just born to kill and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, now that we've been talking about it, I'm like, you know, I think this is more way more complicated than just that. So,
I agree.
Yeah. See, the context matters. And
it does.
Even though Heriberto Seda was a terrible human being, this story has a lot of layers. So I'm glad
it does. It really does.
Yeah. And we can always learn things from these stories.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So now we're going to get into how not to get murdered. So if you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
So we just came back from CrimeCon and I cannot wait to get my hands on one of those damsel in defense tasers. And it was really cool. We got to do a demonstration of it. And the taser has like the safety mechanism, so it can't be turned on you.
How does that work? Sorry, I didn't get to play with the taser. So how does that work that it can't be turned on you?
So, okay. I don't remember exactly, but there's some
sort of
key.
There's a wrist band. It goes on your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a key in the taser. So if somebody tries to take it from you, the key pops out.
Oh, gotcha.
And it can't turn on.
So it can't activate. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's a woman-owned company. And the tasers are like $90, but they have a lifetime warranty.
Wow.
So if it stops working or you're robbed or, you know, somebody tries to use it on you and then runs away, you can contact the company and get, and they'll replace it. No problem.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, it does appear to be a multi-level marketing company, but it does look like a really cool thing. And I know I want one. So
okay.
I will put a link in the show notes for
okay, cool.
Damsel in Defense Tasers. And now it's shout out time, where we shout out any content by or about any marginalized or othered groups of folks or any true crime goodies. Another CrimeCon goodie, 2-for-1. Crimes of the East is a true crime podcast by a BIPOC woman about cases from India and South Asia. So get that wherever you get your podcasts. What do you got, Beth?
Well, this is a true crime goodie because it's about white people.
Okay.
But it's fascinating. Okay. It's a 2-part docuseries on HBO called Undercurrent, The Disappearance of Kim Wall. It's the story of a Swedish freelance journalist named Kim Wall, who took a ride in a homemade submarine with the intent of interviewing the owner, Danish entrepreneur Peter Madsen.
Mm-hmm.
But she never returned. But guess who did return?
Who?
Peter Madsen.
What?
They went out. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
This case has everything. Submarines.
Yeah.
Journalists, murder, disappearance of a woman. Oh my God.
it's a wild story. I was riveted. Yeah.
Okay. And two parts is not too much of a commitment.
No, it's not too bad. Yeah. I kind of wish there was more. I mean, there probably wasn't more to say, but I just really enjoyed it. That's horrible to say about a murder documentary, but it was good.
Okay. And Minnie, do you have any goodies?
Shout outs?
Or recommendations? Shout outs this week?
Well, I did try. I decided to do the free trial of the Magellan TV that was advertising at the Crime Con. Yeah,
right.
That place we were at. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
So they actually work in Canada as well as the U.S.
Oh, nice.
And so I have a free trial that I can use until the 20th. If I don't cancel it by then I pay for it. But it's pretty cheap. It's like $60 a year.
That is.
And they
cheap.
Get a bunch of documentaries. I was talking to them when we were there, and they said one of the people who used to do the Discovery Channel is now with them. Because I was mentioning, I was like, yeah, I used to love the Discovery Channel, but then they got all weird, and they're like, oh, well, that's cool because we have the person from the Discovery Channel with us now. I'm like, oh, sweet.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. So they have a bunch of documentaries. A lot of it is true crime, but they also have like stuff that I like natural science and history and culture and stuff like that. So if you want to check it out, it's on MagellanTV.com.
All right.
You can try it out. Yeah.
All right.
So that is Magellan TV, MagellanTV.com, and an HBO program called Undercurrent, The Disappearance of Kim Wall. It's with a W, y'all. And Crimes from the East, wherever you get your podcasts. Oh my gosh, you guys, this was so fun.
Egg
is gone. Spirit is here. But that's it for today. Where can the people find us, Beth?
Our website is FruitLoopsPod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. Join our discussion group on Facebook at Fruit Loops Pod Discussion. If you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App. Just Google Fruit Loops Pod Cash App, or you can become a monthly patron through Patreon. This will help us pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help. And as always, we have merch for sale on our website.
All of the things she said are correct. Now, this is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one, the one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. A production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.